Hi, this is Jack Healy of the Human Rights Action Center in Washington, D.C. About 1994-95, I and my partner, Farrell Gary, were invited to observe a trial in Belfast, Ireland. Two boys, one had been killed, executed, and the other was wounded. After clearing the checkpoint, they went into a bar nearby and had a drink and then came out. As they were driving out, they opened up, British troops opened up on them, 23 armor-piercing shells. One boy died instantly and the other was wounded. So I was there for this trial. On the way over, I landed in Manchester so I could go right back to Belfast. And they kept interviewing me 3-4 times, so I finally told the lady, whatever she was, cop or customs, one more time, lady, I'm going to explode here because I'm tired of telling you. I'm a former director of Amnesty International. I'm nonviolent. I'm an American citizen. You can't keep interviewing me. So finally they left me alone. Found out later, as we mounted the plane, there weren't many people on the plane. Ian Paisley was on the plane, and they had a lot of protection around him. He was one of the Protestant leaders in Northern Ireland. Well, I tried to go up to him on the plane, but his bodyguards would not let me talk to him. But I did give it a try. We landed in Belfast, and it was interesting because they put me in a cab of a Protestant driver. You could either get Catholic or Protestant, you didn't know. But he took me to where the IRA had blown up a building or two. And so I asked him, well, take me somewhere where the provost, the Protestants, have destroyed buildings and show me those as well. He didn't want to do that. But we attended the trial. There's another lawyer from New York with us. I didn't know his name, never did know his name. But he wanted to be objective, so he stayed away from Farrell and me. I don't know why he thought we wouldn't be objective, but there you have it. Maybe me being Irish, I don't know. Irish-American. But anyway, he thought he was being objective, and it turned out 3 days later, because we had a long weekend before the trial, Charles delayed for a day or two. He had been hanging out with one of the IRA members, actually a joint commander of one of the areas, and he didn't even discover it. I don't think even when he left he knew. But so the trial started, and when it did, you could see the I think his name was Eckington, the soldier who shot those 23 armor-piercing bullets. He was roaming around saying hello to everybody, all friendly, like none of it in chains or anything like that. He's an army uniform. He's showing off, basically. So I went over to see Mr. Carraher, whose son had died and the other wounded. And I said to him, Mr. Carraher, what do you think? He said, Jack, we're in Belfast. We'll never get any justice in this building. So sure enough, as the case unfolded, he was right. No question about that. So I went over to him. And I said, tell me about your farm. Tell me about what happens. And what he described, Mr. Carraher described, was Huey helicopters land on their property quite often, SWAT teams. And they'd come to the door, knock on the door, give them 7 seconds to answer. If they didn't, they'd break through the door and go in, you know, threaten the young boys and girls, saying, your brothers are IRA members. We know they are. So, you know, and then break a Catholic statue or two. So, you know, this story really, I hope, has some resonance with those of you who work with people. My suggestion is you get as close as possible to the problem. In other words, as close to the victim or whatever you're working on. Get as close to that. Know the community, know the vibe. You know, try to get a handle on it all. And so he started telling me about the farm and what they did on a regular basis. And there's nothing he said he could do about that. And I said, I'll try and figure something out. But I did get close to him. I worked with him during the trial. I sat near him, talked to him. Nice man, about my age. and a lot of wonderful children. It was fun to be with them. They were actually a live bunch. And what I did find out was that in law, I started looking it up, that in law, when British troops enter homes of Catholics in Northern Ireland, they had certain rights, and they could be protected. So what I come up with was, and Ferriel, of course, was the smartest one, and she was a Georgetown lawyer, so she could follow the case and, read it and see how the judge was doing much better than me. But we sat and figured out a system on how we would print four big signs to be put on the front door and the back door of the home that was being oppressed by these SWAT teams of the British SAS troops. And on it would be we'd get 10 Irish Catholic families, and they'd be listed there. And if the sign would say, if you enter this home, you'll be filmed, you'll be faxed, and it will be monitored audio hearing as well. And with those 10 Irish families, each would donate $100, and that'd be $1,000. We could give them to buy, if they didn't have it, a fax, small camera. It could be cheap as old hang. And a fax machine would go immediately saying, have it ready, and already set in the fax machine. All that would go to 10 American families who could go to their congressman and complain that British troops were violating the secrecy or the privacy of that Irish family. And so we put them on the front door and the back door, and it worked. Because the British found out their own law was if they broke in there, they had to pay for everything. Or if they stole the camera or, the tape recorder or any of it, we could get repaid for it. And so it was a revolving door. We could actually get our stuff back or get new stuff paid for by the British. The peace agreement came, and that kind of action was no longer needed, but it proved that if you get close to the victim, I think you can solve a solution for them, if you get close. If you stay far away, you won't. I think that's the bottom line to this. And his family never did get justice. The younger boy, I think, eventually went to jail and was freed when peace came. I don't know what he went to jail for, but he did go to jail. And it was a case where your heart would break, but there was nothing much you could do about it. And so I was looking for an action that would be doable and do it legally so that you could have a legal recourse as well. And that worked. It wasn't pro-IRA. It was pro-family. We wanted to protect them. They had a right to their privacy. And the boy who had died, they lost a son and the other one was wounded. And there was no compensation for that. And in our trial, we couldn't have got it because the British soldier was deemed innocent in the execution of one of their boys. So I guess the bottom line of this podcast is it's hard to get justice in Northern Ireland in those days. And I'm glad the peace came, and I'm glad the peace is holding. So we got to make sure that peace holds now as Brexit comes apart. We have to make sure that fight doesn't erupt again, because it was working, people liked it. And so if you have any help or thoughts with Northern Ireland, let us know, or let them know. And let's keep the peace over Northern Ireland's working. Let's keep it up. This is Jack Healy for Human Rights Action Center. Thank you.